from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Mainline Texas Republicans will tell you that secession talk in Texas is a joke. Maybe so. But mainline Republicans lately have a lot of competition from Tea Partiers and hard right critics of the federal government. Texas Governor Rick Perry says he's against secession, but he's flirted with it. Texas Congressman Ron Paul says secession is a deeply American principle. A petition before the White House has a lot of signatures saying, let Texas secede now. This hour on Point, we're looking at the secession talk out of Texas. You can join the conversation. How do you size this up? Is this just Texas-style venting on the kooky fringe? Is it real? What's it all about? How do you read it? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Let's listen to a little of this sound. This is Rick Perry. This was a Tea Party rally. Now, granted, this was April 2009 in Austin, Texas. The sound's a little rough here, but the Texas governor, who would go on to run in the Republican primary, responded to a reporter who asked about those who had associated him with secession and Texas sovereignty. It's rough, but you'll hear.
When we came in the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that. My hope is that America, and Washington in particular, pays attention. We got a great union. There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it. But if Washington continues to thumb their nose at the American people, you know, who knows what might come out of that.
Texas Governor Rick Perry, that's April 2009. If Washington continues to thumb their noses at the American people, who knows what may come out of that? There's absolutely no reason to dissolve this great union, he says, but who knows? April, same month, reaffirmed just this month, Texas Congressman Ron Paul said secession was very much, he called it, an American principle.
Just think of the benefits that would have come over these last 230-some years if the principle of secession had existed. That means the federal government would always have been restrained not to overburden the states with too much federalism, too many federal rules and regulations. But since that was all wiped out with the Civil War, the federal government has grown by leaps and bounds, and we have suffered the consequences. And we need to reconsider this.
Ron Paul, congressman, Texas congressman and Republican, and then his own candidate for the presidency of the United States. Think of the benefits that would have come out of the threat of secession. We need to reconsider this, Ron Paul, and his office reaffirming that just this month. It's all been getting a lot of attention lately. A lot of people say this is nothing but fringe. There it was on the front page of the New York Times this weekend saying secessionists are moving into the mainstream in Texas. So let's hear it. Let's start with one of those Lone Star voices that wants out of these United States. Joining me from Nederland, Texas, is Daniel Miller. He's president of an organization called the Texas Nationalist. Mr. Miller, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Howdy, Tom.
Do you want out?
We want out, but more than wanting out, we want to assert our freedom and independence.
And what freedom and independence is that? I mean, you are one of the 50 states. What is that freedom and independence, Daniel Miller?
Well, you look at Article 1, Section 1 of our state constitution, which, by the way, is a post-Civil War constitution, and it starts with the words, Texas is a free and independent state. But it also ends with these words, the maintenance of our free institutions and the perpetuity of the Union depend on the right of local self-government unimpaired to all the states. And frankly, I think it would be difficult for anyone to objectively look at it and say that our right of local self-government has not been impaired.
Texas Governor Rick Perry seemed to be making a nod to that perspective back in 09. These days, he says we've got a great union, and he believes in it. Nothing should be done to change it. What's pushing you to push for this now, Daniel Miller?
Well, it's not just now. You know, our organization has been engaged in this process for 16 years, and the fact that that people want to couch this reaction as some reaction to the election of Barack Obama. It's not. It's a reaction to decades of overreach and abuse of the federal government and its complete disregard for the Constitution, the thing that binds us together. So, you know, this is not some reaction. And although the governor says that the union is great and that there's no need to change it. The fact of the matter is that the union has fundamentally changed because of disregard for the Constitution.
There is this petition up on the White House website now, 117,000 plus signatures and counting, that went up 3 days after the election, calling for the United States to peacefully grant the state of Texas permission to withdraw from the USA. Have you signed that petition, Daniel?
I have not signed the petition. We've directed our members to Austin rather than Washington, D.C. You know, Texas independence is not something that's a mother may I issue. It's one where we have to stand up and assert our rights, and that road leads right through Austin.
What do you mean, stand up and assert your rights? What do you mean, not a mother may I issue? We had a civil war over this once before. Are you talking? What are you talking?
Well, it's pretty straightforward, you know, and frankly, Tom, I hear that quite often, that the Civil War settled this issue. And if you look at it from a common sense perspective, if someone is held up at gunpoint, then they should never talk to the police, because at the moment that they're held up by gunpoint and their property's taken, then according to that theory, then it's a settled issue. The fact of the matter is that the Civil War didn't settle anything. The right of self-government, the right of us, especially the self-government of the states, exists. It continues to exist, completely devoid of the Civil War. And you could see that quite plainly. You know, at the end of World War II, there were 54 recognized countries around the globe. At the end of the 20th century, there were 192. So the right of self-government is a fundamental principle on par with the right of freedom of religion and freedom of speech.
Mr. Miller, I've got to ask you. I mean, my great-great-uncle Marcus fought in that war, went down the Mississippi, ended his time up in Texas, practically had his foot blown off. I don't think he would take kindly to saying that was about nothing. But I just have to ask, are you really, is this a political point you're making, or are you really serious? Do you imagine an independent country right there in the belly of the U.S. called Texas?
Well, Tom, let's just get back to this, because I'm not saying that the Civil War was about nothing. What I'm saying is, and I'm responding to the fact you said that it settled the issue. And the fact of the matter is, it never settled the issue. It never suppressed the right of self-government.
Are you for real, then? Are you serious? Do you really mean take Texas out of the Union?
16 years, I would say, is pretty serious, Tom.
Could it survive on its own?
Definitely, definitely. We would not only be the economic powerhouse that we are now, we would be a global economic power.
What do you say to fellow conservatives? I'm looking here at redstate.com. You know, Eric Erickson's a very, very influential, very conservative website. He says, look, Barack Obama won the election. He didn't steal it. We're citizens. We have no plans to secede from the union. If you do, this is not the place for you, he writes. He says, too many people have spent the past 4 years obsessed with birth certificates. Now they're obsessed with voter fraud and talk of secession. He says, let's add dabblers in this latest nuttiness to a category of people we do not welcome here. He says, we may not care for President Obama, but he's our president, and we are quite happily citizens of the United States. You know, he says, back off, secessionists. You're not part of our conservative crowd.
Well, it's pretty interesting, because whether it's people that take on the conservative or liberal mantle, you know, we go out, we make cogent arguments in the political, cultural, and economic realm. And the sole comeback is that somehow this is nutty.
But what about treasonous?
The same people that are driving around with free Tibet stickers on the backs of their on the back of their car, or, you know, I'm guessing they think that what's going on in Scotland in the independence referendum they're going to have in 2014 is nutty. You know, those are not arguments. Those are not sane, logical, rational, grown-up arguments. And they're not real responses to what we are out there promoting for people.
Daniel Miller, please stand by there in Nederland, Texas. With us right now from Dallas is Wade Goodwin, Dallas-based national correspondent for NPR. Wade, welcome back to On Point.
Hello, Tom.
What do you make of this movement? Here it is on the front page of the New York Times saying it's going mainstream. Here's Daniel Miller saying, yes, he's dead serious about it. But an awful lot of people say this is just fringe. How do you see what's going on here, Wade?
Well, I think it's one instance where the New York Times got it a little bit wrong. It doesn't happen often. The reporter states in his piece that in Texas, secession has moved from the fringe to the center. And that's simply not true. And in fact, the rest of the Times story demonstrates that fact. I'd say Texas Governor Rick Perry is one of the most conservative governors in the nation. And although he's played Tea Party footsie in the past on the issue of secession, not even Governor Perry is actually going to sign up for secession. It'd be political suicide. There's a big difference between Perry saying something like, I can see how some Texans are so mad at the federal government they want to secede, and I know how they feel.
Yep.
And Perry or any Texas politician actually committing to getting out of the Union. The first time the South seceded, it was about whether white people could have dominion over black people. So the word secession conjures up that moss-covered, plantation-owned Confederate point of view. And if your desire for secession is a reaction to the re-election of our first black president, it's not that great a leap to wonder if this latest call to secede is again rooted in racial politics.
But when the governor's spokesman says, you know, he shares the frustrations many Americans have with our federal government when they're talking about secession, is he still playing footsie? Or is it clear that he's saying, no, stop it, don't talk about this?
I think he was telling the Tea Party at the time when he was saying this, I'm with you. He was one of the first major politicians to signal to the Tea Party that he agreed with them and he was going to be with them. And he really rode that wave for quite a while. I don't hear him saying the kinds of things now that he was saying back then. And I don't think that secession is going to be a political winner for politicians, no matter what conservative stripe they are.
117,000 signatures on that White House website petition for secession for Texas. What do you make of that, Wade?
Well, I mean, I'd say more Texans believe in UFOs than believe in secession. So, we're a big state, and there's a lot of conservatives here. But people who sign that up, I think that's more of a reaction, a frustration about the election of Barack Obama to president. I'm not sure that that's really, let's get out of the union and raise taxes and raise our own $1 trillion so we can replace what the government has already created here.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Texas. Texans talking secession. There's a big petition at the White House right now, 100,000 plus signatures saying, let us, Texas, pull out of the USA. We're looking at what that is all about. Wade Goodwin is with us, Dallas-based national correspondent for NPR. Daniel Miller is here, proponent of Texas secession, president of the Texas Nationalist Movement, joins us from Nederland, Texas today. Johnny Miller, Wade Goodwin's saying, you know, he imagines that more Texans believe in UFOs than in secession. What do you say to that, Mr. Miller?
Well, I think it's interesting because of the Research 2000 poll back in 2009 that showed that 48% of Republicans, 15% of Democrats, and 40% of Independents were on board with the idea. You know, and I have to respond to this because I think it's interesting that Wade is kind of like the dog that returns to his own vomit on the issue of race. I don't understand exactly what it is about the fact that we have been here since prior to Barack Obama's presidency that he and folks like him don't understand. You know, our membership, the support for Texas independence, spans across all ethnic lines. We have significant numbers, probably more so than the Republican Party at large, of people of non-European descent. So this is not about race.
Let us pick it up. Wade Goodwin, where do you see the race thread, if you do, Wade, in the secessionist movement?
Well, I think that the sudden surge in petition signings, I do believe, is related to the election. And I think it's maybe not that great a leap to wonder if there is some racial politics involved in the call to secede.
I mean, I do have to point out,
you've got a it's impossible to know why people to look inside their minds and know why people do anything. But secession is about leaving the Union. And it has always been about whether the white-controlled South could have dominion over its own fate. And primarily, especially in the Civil War, that issue was whether they could have slaves. So I do think the word secession conjures up a certain Confederate point of view, and that's my opinion.
Daniel, I mean, I do have to point out there are also petitions at the White House website now for secession from a number of other states: Alabama, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Florida. Now, Colorado's in there, too, but you can't help but notice the southern locale of the overwhelming majority of those. It does suggest at least what was a Confederate point of view, Mr. Miller.
Well, there are petitions on the White House website, I believe, now for all 50 states. So, you know, again, trying to couch this as some old argument from the 19th century, it is pretty ridiculous. You know, I don't know that anyone is over in Scotland pitching this as, the new Scottish National Party's movement for a referendum is some throwback to William Wallace.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to have some Scotsmen call up and tell us, but there may be elements of that. Daniel Miller, please stand by there in Needleland, Texas. I want to get a couple more Texans in this conversation. From Dallas, Texas right now, Bill McKenzie joins us, Pulitzer Prize-winning editorial columnist for the Dallas Morning News. Bill, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And from Austin, Texas, Steve Monasteri joins us. He's chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. Steve, thank you for being here.
You're welcome. Hello, Tom.
Hi. If I may come first to you, Steve, here's Daniel Miller. He's holding the flag high for secession, says there's been federal overreach, and it is time for Texas to exercise what he calls a Texan right. Is there such a right? And what do you make of this movement, Steve?
Well, there's zero chance of secession. The Supreme Court ruled in Texas versus White in 1869 that states do not have a right to secede. In addition, in the Constitutional Convention of the State of Texas of 1866, Texas affirmed at that time that it no longer had a right to secede.
Okay, so you say there's no right. Do you support the idea? Do you support the urge that's represented in this secession move?
Well, I'm an American. I'm proud to be an American, so I just view this as a non-issue. There is zero chance of secession of any state in the United States.
If there was a chance, would you do it? Is that what you're suggesting or not?
No, I didn't suggest that at all. As a matter of fact, I suggested the contrary. I said I'm an American and I'm proud to be an American.
Is it a problem? You're the chairman of the Republican Party in Texas. Is it a problem for the party to have this kind of movement going on and this kind of attention to it?
Well, it's a movement not within the Republican Party. The Republican Party policy is contained in its 269-plank platform that was just adopted a few months ago, and nowhere in that platform is there any call for secession.
Daniel Miller, do you see yourself as entirely outside the Republican Party? Do you look for backers within the GOP?
No, we have backers inside the state GOP, and I think that's the point that the chairman's missing here, is that, you know, if you look at the Republican Party platform here in Texas, you know, you see some reaffirmation of the Constitution, support for the Constitution, especially the 10th Amendment. But, my challenge to the chairman is this. Every elected official in Texas takes an oath to the Texas Constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution. And you cannot ignore the fact that Article 1, Section 1 states unequivocally that the maintenance of our free institutions and the perpetuity of the Union depend on the right of local self-government unimpaired to all the states. And the chairman has been supportive of all the actions to fight the federal government when they have impaired our right of local self-government. And the fact of the matter is that those things have been soundly defeated, and it's now time for Texas to stand up and deal with Article 1, Section 1 and Article 1, Section 2.
Well, you can't take one part of the Texas Constitution without also looking at other parts of the Texas Constitution. The original Constitution that we go by from 1876, its roots are in the Constitution of 1866, and I will read from you the Constitution of the State of Texas of 1866, which has not been at any time rescinded. It says, be it ordained by the people of Texas assembled that we acknowledge the supremacy of the Constitution of the United States and the laws passed in pursuance thereof, and that the ordinance adopted by the former convention of the people of Texas on the first day of February 1861, entitled an ordinance to dissolve the union between the state of Texas and other states, united under the compact style Constitution of the United States, be in the same as hereby declared null and void, and the right hereto of claim by the state of Texas to secede from the Union is hereby distinctly renounced.
We hear it. Bill McKenzie, I want to bring this to you, but if I may just play that Governor Perry tape once more, because I want to ask you about it, Stephen. This was Governor Perry at a Tea Party rally in Austin, Texas, where you are now. This was April 2009, and it's a little rough, but he starts out saying, when we came into the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that. This is your governor, Republican, saying this. And he says, we've got a great union, he goes on to say, no reason to dissolve it. But if Washington continues to thumb their noses at the American people, who knows what may come of that? Let's listen once more. Here's the governor.
When we came in the Union in 1845, one of the issues was that we would be able to leave if we decided to do that. My hope is that America, and Washington in particular, pays attention. We got a great union. There's absolutely no reason to dissolve it. But if Washington continues to thumb their nose at the American people, you know, who knows what might come out of that?
Republican Governor of Texas Rick Perry, 2009. Let me just ask you, Steve Monasteri, Chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, have you, the governor, fought the federal government so hard, disdained it so thoroughly that you've kind of brought on this revived interest in secession?
Well, you said you, meaning me.
Yes, sir.
I've never brought any sort of revived issue in secession, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm talking about the very fierce criticism of the federal government and its role. I mean, is that in a near neighbor of this movement?
No. We have a democracy, and we're allowed to have fierce criticism of the federal government and to express our views through the ballot box, which is what we do. But let me point out something, and the governor has since clarified, which you have not pointed out.
Yes, I have, but please.
In 1845, well, you haven't pointed out that he's pointed out that in 1845 he misspoke. We didn't have a right to secede in the original annexation treaty. What has confused some people is in the original annexation treaty, which was then upheld by the Supreme Court in 1901, it gave Texas the unique right to split into five states, which is what he meant to refer to. We still have that right. There's no question we have that right. If we want to, we can
Texas 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And have 10 senators. So that is a remedy we have if we want to exert additional impact on the federal government.
That would be very attention getting. Bill McKenzie, come in here. What do you make of all this, Bill? First of all, the new petition that's come out since the election, 100,000 plus signatures saying let us out. The voices that you're hearing out of Texas and have heard for some time, the fresh national attention to this, witness page one of the New York Times, et cetera.
Right. Well, I would agree with Wade. I don't think in any shape or form has this really moved into the center of discussion in Texas or even within, you know, Texas conservatism, the idea of leaving the union. So I would agree with Wade on this one. I think the New York Times has overplayed this. that said, I think it's really very important for people like Mr. Munisteri and Eric Erickson of Red State to be speaking out about this. And I think the points Steve is making here are really very valid and important and good and excellent points. And I think those voices, people who are identified either with the Republican Party or the conservative movements, are the ones who need to be speaking out about this to kind of to rebut it before it goes much further. Because if movements, conservative movement, liberal movements, all that, they're always going to be a collection of different interests. What they need to make sure they're doing is moving as a core in a central direction. And not letting the fringe within their movements direct them otherwise. And I go back to what William F. Buckley did in the early 1960s within the conservative movement. He really made a point of trying to separate National Review, his magazine, Goldwaterism, Young Americans for Freedom, from the racist within the conservative movement, from the John Birchers who were arguing back then that not only were there communists in America, but communists were actually running the government, and that Eisenhower was a communist. And Buckley went out of his way through his pages of his magazine to really rebut that. And so here we have two voices. Steve is making his views here. We have Erickson, a little sharper edge, making his. I think we need to hear those voices.
Wade Goodwin there in Dallas, how do you see this over time? I mean, we heard what Governor Perry said in 2009. We heard what Ron Paul has said and continues to say on his website. You know, secession is a deeply American principle. Have GOP leaders in Texas given fuel to this movement over time, Wade? I mean, Steve says, look, dissent is constitutionally protected, and it certainly is. But there's history here, and there's a movement here.
Well, let's put it in context here. If you're a Republican politician who just witnessed your party get its head kicked in because devastating numbers of Black, Hispanic, and Asians voted against Governor Romney, this is the last direction you want to go. And smart Republicans, the Republican establishment, is absolutely, positively not interested in anything to do with secession. And they understand that the subject of secession is a cudgel that the media can and will beat them over the head with. I just got back from covering the Republican Governor's Convention in Las Vegas, and Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal said to his fellow Republicans on the ballroom stage, we've got to stop being the dumb party. Now, Jindal was talking about ill-advised conservative male proclamations about rape, but the subject of secession also qualifies.
Let's go to our listeners, Jeff in Charleston, South Carolina. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to make a point. It seems like here we have 117,000 signatures on this petition that's representing a state of, I believe, more than 26 million people.
Yeah, very big state, true.
Yeah, it just seems like they're short about 26 million signatures.
So what do you think the right response is? Still, it's a sharp, it gets everybody's attention. We fought a civil war about this once before. I mean, secession rings a bell. Should it just be ignored? Should we be lifting the covers to see what it's about? How do you respond to it, Jeff?
I think there are always points that we can try to glean out of these, but secession in general just doesn't, it's never going to be the answer. We're here, united we stand. I don't know what else to say. There, the 117,000 can get on a boat, as far as I'm concerned.
But, Jeff, we've got it from Charleston, South Carolina, one from New Orleans, Louisiana. Brett's calling. Brett, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
So, I have to agree a lot with what was just said. The fact of the matter is you have 25,000 people signing a petition in states that have millions of people.
25,000 where, Brett?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is from Louisiana.
Oh, so, in your state. Okay. Similar thing. Yeah.
And so what happens with these petitions is that's just to bring it to the attention of the government. It gives it no clout. It doesn't move it forward legally.
What's it mean? What's behind it?
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it really is about the election. It's an emotional response by a very upset conservative base. And it's the same way, like y'all were saying earlier, that Democrats reacting to the Bush election. Oh, I'm going to move to Canada. You didn't have a mass exodus to Canada. It's an absolutely absurd emotional response.
Yeah, Brett, we've got it. Let me get one more before the break, and I appreciate your call from New Orleans, Brett. Rick in Buffalo, New York. Rick, you're on.
Okay. I'm a member of the Tea Party of Western New York, and We are not a bunch of fringe kooks. The people I know are conservative, yes, a good many Republicans, not all, and we have a multiracial mix in our group.
What do you think about secession, Rick?
We think that's sort of it's a manifestation of the frustration of the general Tea Party movement, which is, I believe, a true American movement that has been vilified.
Well, we just had an election, right? And it had its results. I mean, isn't it American to support the results of an election?
We had an election, and as I recall, we reinstated a Republican Congress, which I believe Tea Party felt it was going to be more conservative. So this sort of negates the fact that this was an overwhelming... I know the presidential side of it, obviously, but we did hold the Congress, and that was a check. The American people, the House of Representatives represents the people.
Right, so you've got a political point of view, but does it leave you sympathetic to secessionists in Texas or elsewhere?
I think not, but that's a manifestation of our frustration in the Tea Party movement. We are not very organized. There is no party.
Hey, Rick, we got to take a break right here, but we've got that perspective, and I appreciate you calling in. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking about Texas. Texans talking secession this hour. There's a petition at the White House right now, 100,000 plus signatures. Of course, I guess anybody could sign it from anywhere in the world, and maybe they can sign it a lot of times. Still, what it says is, let us, Texas, pull out of the USA. We're looking at what that's all about. lot of people saying this is well, well outside the mainstream, despite some of the national attention that it's been receiving. But it is an interesting one to look at, and it's had prominent GOP leaders in Texas kind of talking it up. In Ron Paul's case, explicitly, Rick Perry's kind of from just a little distance for some time, though he says now it's a great union and no need to dissolve it, but he's sympathetic with the frustrations, he says, of people here. Daniel Miller is with us. He's for secession, president of the Texas Nationalist Movement. Wade Goodwin, NPR correspondent based in Dallas, is here. Bill McKenzie, the Dallas Morning News, and Steve Monasteri, who is chairman of the Republican Party of Texas. Mary's calling from Lexington, Kentucky. Mary, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. I am living in probably one of the reddest states in the union, but I find this very treasonous. And what I am, but the question I have is, let's say by the wildest imagination, they do secede. What does the, what aid or what financial things do they have from the federal government that will be pulled away, and what will happen to their own tax base? And will these same people be furious if their taxes go up so much just to keep the services that they're used to having?
Daniel Miller, let us pick that up. Mary, Daniel Miller, nobody else on this panel takes it seriously, but you do. And if it would come to pass, Mary thinks you may be tough out of luck there without federal support. What do you say to that?
Well, let's face it. Where does that money that comes back to the state of Texas come from? It comes from the pockets of hardworking men, women, and families here in Texas to the tune of about $300 billion a year. And, there was an article that was released in The Economist magazine where they broke it down and said over the last 20 years, the fact of the matter is that Texas has received much less from the federal government than it's put into the system. So,
of course, a lot of other states fall in that category. I mean, should we all just drift apart here?
Well, not a lot. But the question is, and I'm not saying that that's the sole reason. I'm answering the question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that there are a handful of states, not just Texas, but a small number, that in effect subsidize the rest of the union. And so, if you're looking at it shifting the tax value from Washington, D.C. to Austin, we would have plenty of money to take care of every single service we have, plus wind up giving folks a tax break.
Let me take that to Bill McKenzie. Bill, maybe this is all just making you roll your eyes and swallow your tongue. I don't know. But have you run the numbers? Does this work?
Well, I haven't run the numbers lately. And I'm doing this off the top of my head, but my recollection, is there was a story in the last year or so that we no longer are in effect losing money by what we send up to Washington. I think we may be a net winner or the even mark, but somebody should check that. So, but does it in the long run benefit Texas? Well, you got to pay for a military somehow. You got to pay for your own highways and making them run. And last I checked, we're having problems here in Texas being able to finance our own roads without there's a big hue and cry about that. You got to provide all your various water projects. We're having a big challenge here in the state to do that.
Sure.
So there are a number of fundamentals that you got to do. And I think I think the more important thing for conservatives is really to focus on how can you do the core functions of government well? And if you do the core functions of government well, I think perhaps then you're able to satisfy some of the frustration that people have, either with the federal government or with the state government.
But isn't part of this, though, people not wanting the federal government to do as much? I mean, that's what we're hearing. Though you're right, when there's water problems, Governor Perry's come to the federal government. Other kind of FEMA issues, he's come. And of course, you've got a lot of military and all the rest. But isn't the political message here, federal government, get away, stand back?
Sure, no question. And I think perhaps in fairness to Mr. Miller, I think there is an element that's feeling this is it's anti-federalism.
Mm.
And that has a long tradition, and that has been manifested in various ways, including, as Wade pointed out, through racist politics. But it's a long tradition, has various roots to it. But I would point out we have a majority of our members of Congress here in Texas are Republican. I don't hear them talking about this. I think mm-hmm. you're hear more of them talking about, well, how are we going to take care of the deficit? We just got through interviewing on our editorial page candidates for state house, for state senate, and for state office, as well as for Congress. And I don't ever remember the word succession coming up during the interview. So I don't remember anybody talking about
this. That's pretty telling.
Yeah.
That is pretty telling. A lot of comments here. Brian says about this idea. He says, treason in plain sight. TM says, secessionists, pack your grip, sell your house, and move somewhere you like better. Destiny says, I'm all for it. They can become part of Mexico if they want. Who cares? Well, Texas is a pretty big part of this country. Dennis in Omaha, Nebraska. Dennis, you're on the air.
Hello. Hey, somebody just said something like, Texas is subsidizing us, and we here in Nebraska, we pay a lot of money in gasoline at the pump, and maybe we're subsidizing Texas. But the actual point I was calling about was Texas has dominated energy, military, and taxation policies in this last half century. Do they get to take their fair share of the debt when they go? Because they've dominated the policies. They've led us to this debt. And it's not fair for them to have only 1/50th of the debt because they've really led us there.
That is interesting. Daniel Miller, will you take a big chunk of debt with you if you go?
Well, if you follow the independence movements over the last 40 years globally, what you see is that's one of the things that is talked about over the negotiation table. You know, I mean, look, let's not mince words here. You know, what we're talking about is the equivalent of a political divorce. And the fact of the matter is that in any divorce proceeding, you've got an issue of property division of property, division of debt. So that's a conversation that will have to be had, but it's not dissimilar to conversations that are being had throughout the world in many places that are seeking independence right now.
Let's go to San Angelo, Texas, and Melissa. Melissa, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think, Melissa?
My opinion is that many of us that would never actually put our signature on the petition at this point, it's actually a being from a Texas native, I mean, it's always been the talk of secession because many of us are very frustrated with basically other people's views being so different than ours and a government that is so far from us telling us what we have to, I mean, basically they're making us at this point pay for the morning after pill. You know, we don't like to be forced to give our money and be told what to do with it.
But what about the idea that the union itself is fundamentally important, that we are all in this together and we democratically decide our way forward, and that's what we're up to? How do you get from that to, you know, secession, Melissa?
Well, I'm not saying that we're at that point. I'm definitely not saying that. I wouldn't put my name on the secession petition at this point. I'm just saying that frustration is definitely there. Many of us that are, you know, have our Christian beliefs, and I don't like the direction that we're going. My Christianity comes first. I don't like being told basically that, I mean, it just feels like our government is godless at this point, and I don't have the trust there that was there even a matter of years ago.
Melissa, I appreciate your call. Steve Munisteri, you're chairman of the GOP in Texas. You've seen the results in recent years, and I've read you talking about them. 2010 was a pretty good showing, and you've had control of the state government for a long time. But, you know, the demographics of Texas are changing, and a lot of people are saying Texas may be the next big swing state and could swing blue as its demographics change. If Melissa's frustrated now, but if Republicans want to maintain a strong voice in Texas, what kind of positions do you think they're going to need to take, Steve?
Well, first, we need just to continue our track record of success. That's the best guarantee for electoral success. In Texas, over the last 10 years, we've consistently been in the bottom three or four of taxes per person, spending per person, and this has resulted in us having economic growth to the extent that we increased our economy by 93% over the last 10 years. That's about 50% higher than the average state, which is 66%, consistently below national unemployment numbers. We've created more jobs in the last 10 years than any other state. We've absorbed 800,000 job seekers from other states in the last 10 years. We have more Fortune 500 companies. We basically didn't have a recession when the rest of the country did.
But still, you've been ringing a big bell yourself for Republicans saying we got to pay attention to where things are going.
Well, you have to make sure you pay attention to all segments of your society, and what I've preached, and I did before I was even chairman, is that we have a changing society, as just as societies have always changed. Mm-hmm. I'm from an Italian immigrant family. Mm-hmm. The Northeast changed dramatically with immigrants from Italy and Ireland in the first part of the century.
Sure.
And we in Texas have to recognize that these types of changes are occurring here, and we have a very diverse population. What may not be known to your audience is that Texas is already 55% traditional minority. We are the only majority minority state in the union that's solidly Republican, so we must be doing something right because we keep winning overwhelmingly. But we need to stay ahead of the curve and make sure we reach out to every community. And I've also been a critic of those in the party that have not advocated expending resources to the African-American community. There's a lot of talk about the Hispanic community, but I think we have a moral obligation as a party to bring our views to everyone. And even though we only get 4% of the African-American vote, I think it's important we have a presence in the African-American community. They're a very important part of the national community, and they're very important part of the state. Our fastest growing community is not the Hispanic community. That's a common misconception, but by far the fastest growing community in the state of Texas are Texans of Asian descent, and over the next couple of decades there will be as many people in the state of Asian descent, for example, as there are of African American descent. So we need to make sure that we reach out to Hispanics, African Americans, Asians, and young people. If you don't, then we will not win elections in the future.
Wade Goodwin, there in Dallas, speak to this moment and this, again, upsurge at the moment of interest or attention anywhere for the secessionist call in the arc of the evolution of Texas politically here. Is this a kind of a last hurrah, given where Texas is headed demographically? What about the challenge the GOP is looking at there after many years, of, as Steve says, of great success?
I think Melissa was, you know, very representative of how many Texans feel about this. They were deeply upset by the first term of President Barack Obama. They felt he was taking the country in exactly the wrong direction. You could not get more fervor for, you know, than many Texans, Republican Texans, had for defeating President Obama and what they believed he stood for. And when President Obama was reelected, this was deeply disappointing. And I think many Republican Texans do feel that the country that they thought they knew, America, is not the same country anymore, that things have changed. And you hear Bill O'Reilly say things like mm-hmm. that traditional America has changed. And therefore, that makes you think, well, do I still want to be a part of this? I'm not sure anymore. And maybe deep down inside, yes, of course, they're going to stay a part of America, but they feel a little betrayed.
Bill, we wanted to pick this up and look at it, not because I don't know where it's going to go. And, you know, you and others say this is not part of the mainstream conversation there. And yet it seems to represent something here that surely, as Americans, we want to get beyond. I mean, this, you know, we've got a great collective history here that people have fought hard for. And this sense of division and sense among some that we want out, how do we get that back to a sense of we've got collective problems to work on, and how do we work on them effectively, Bill?
Well, I may be wrong here, but it seems to me that one way you address it over long term is you start solving some of these problems that we do have, either some of those I ticked off here in Texas,
mm-hmm.
or the ones that we may have nationally, starting with the debt and starting with our economic problems. I think that's perhaps one way you can deal with some of the problems. The questions that Melissa raised are more social in nature, and those, you know, I think we're always going to have some pretty serious divisions over, unlike, say, the debt and economic ones, where perhaps you can find some consensus and some way out of it. So maybe we're always going to have some strain of this going on. And as we talked about earlier, I mean, the anti-federalism is not new to this movement that we're talking about today. It's been around for a long time. We're going to have elements of it. Goes back to Jeffersonianism in a way. So this is part of our tradition. But I think if we start solving some of our problems, maybe this will take some of the energy out of it.
Do you chalk this talk up to some of the sort of sympathetic comments that we have heard from GOP leaders over time? I mean, Governor Perry did sound sympathetic there in 2009. Ron Paul has sounded sympathetic much more recently.
Well, I think that I think there's a difference between the Tea Party and what Mr. Miller may be representing. And I'm not sure exactly where you draw the line, but I don't really hear the Tea Party calling for its members to rally to leave, for their states to leave the country. So I think there's a difference there. However, I think Perry was playing footsies with some of this. He got burned. I think he realized he got burned, and he has moved back. He moved away from it some.
Steve Monasteri, what's your advice to Daniel Miller here? He's strong for secession. You represent the GOP of Texas. What's your advice to him on his direction and conviction here?
Well, the wonderful thing about America is we have a right to our opinion. So I don't pretend to tell other people that they need to think one way or another. I make my arguments for why I think the way I do, and the party stands for what it does.
Even when they're talking secession?
Well, if somebody asked me, I would just say just what I told you earlier. It's a non-issue. It's not going to happen. And I'll give you a George Bush read my lips. Texas is not going to secede. So therefore, I don't spend any, other than you're calling me, I haven't spent any time even thinking about this issue. I have to focus my attention on things that are in the real world. And the real world is, political power and political policy will be decided by elections. And my job is to make sure Republicans are elected. If he wants to have an impact in the real world and get involved in your local races for state rep, state senate, Congress, and work for a strong presidential candidate in 2016.
We've got to go right there. Steve Monasteri, chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, thank you very much for your time today. Daniel Miller in Nederland, Texas. Wade Goodwin, Bill McKenzie, thanks to you all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.